Miranda Lambert. You know a sermon's going to be good when you start out with that. But Miranda Lambert's hit song in 2007, Everyone is Famous in a Small Town, is about how everyone in a small town knows everything about everyone. And usually, everyone knows something scandalous about everyone else, things that are hidden. Everyone is famous in a small town. Well, my grandmother was famous in our small town, but it wasn't because she was hiding anything or because there was something scandalous in her secret life. It was actually for her mission work, which even saying that is extremely odd. She was known for that throughout our small town. And one of the reasons is in the mid-80s, she took a month off of work and away from her family to spend in a small village in Africa. She lived in a small brick house made of out of mud for a whole month. She spent her time there helping missionaries, giving medicine, helping make crutches for polio victims, and being a part of a local church there that was preaching the gospel. We have all of her slideshows. We have all of her souvenirs and boxes in our basement from that month. And every time I go into that area and I move those boxes around, I'm just kind of amazed of the impact that that one trip in her life made on so many others. And this was a time in even our culture, American culture, where everyone was concerned about Africa. We are the world, if you remember that time period, those of you who were alive during that time. But everyone was concerned, and so this was a big deal. There was a newspaper article about her trip. She was even in a WMU magazine article with her picture. But everyone was concerned, and so she was asked to speak at churches and give information about Africa. And I'll never forget the day that she showed up at my elementary school. And I remember thinking, this is getting out of hand. Why is Granny in the lunchroom? Why is she here? And she was there to speak all day to the different classes and teachers about Africa. And I remember thinking, this is odd. This doesn't make any sense. This is the woman who makes me fried eggs and gravy and biscuit on Saturday morning as I'm watching WWF main event. And here she is acting and talking like she knows some stuff. Like she knows things about the world. That she knows things about Africa, and people are wanting to hear from her. And this became her life, and she was involved in all kinds of other mission work throughout her life. I even remember at my high school graduation standing with her, and friends of mine would come up and introduce themselves to my grandmother, and they would say, "Oh, I know you. You're the Africa lady. I know you. I know who you are." And then at her funeral, folks who just would remind me, "Yeah, she came to my church. Miss Katie came to my elementary class and talked about Africa." And I share her story, and I talk about my grandparents quite often because I want you to understand that it's not usually who we think makes the biggest impacts in the kingdom. It's not usually the conference speakers who advocate the best for mission work around the world. It's women who work at Teledyne and teach Mission Friends on Wednesday night. This is how God works, and it's not the way we think. We think if I'm going to change the world, I'm going to make a big impact, I've got to be famous in certain ways, I've got to be on the stage, I've got to be in the spotlight, and that is not at all the way in which God works. And we see that in Genesis chapter 24. The Lord is mentioned 17 times in this chapter. And so Genesis chapter 24 is about the Lord. and it is about the providence of the Lord. Now, often we think about the word providence and it's a big theological word, but actually the word simply means God sees. And it's used to teach us that God is intimately involved in every detail of human history. He sees, he's involved, and he's accomplishing his purposes. He's engaged, he's ordering daily occurrences to fulfill all of his promises, to do everything he said he would do. And here in Genesis chapter 24, the main character isn't Abraham, and it's not Isaac, and it's not even Rebekah. It is Abraham's servant. And we see his name is not even mentioned. And yet he is the central character. And it's to prove a point that just a servant can be successful in God's story when he aligns his life with God's providence. Just a servant who aligns his life to all that God is doing in the world, his providence to do all he said he would do. And this is what we see in Genesis chapter 24. Notice verse 1. Now Abraham was old and well advanced in years. He was probably 140 years old at this time. And he is setting his affairs in order as he is preparing to die. But notice, and the Lord blessed Abraham in all things. Everything that God had promised to do was coming to pass for Abraham. He was blessed beyond measure materially. He has his son Isaac that God promised. We begin to see the promise of the land taking shape last week in a cemetery where he buries his wife. God has blessed him, and everyone knows it. And the story of Abraham centers around the promise that God will bless those who bless him and curse those who curse him. And so to know the providence of God, God's blessing, you have to be aligned with Abraham and God's faithfulness to him. But notice verse 2, Abraham said to his servant, the oldest of his household, his chief servant, who had charge of all that he had, put your hand under my thigh that I may swear by the Lord, the God of heaven and the God of earth, that you will not take a wife for my son from the daughters of the Canaanites, among whom I dwell, but will go to my country and to my kinsmen and take a wife for my son Isaac. So at this point, Isaac doesn't have a wife. And so where are all these descendants going to come from? Well, Abraham knows they cannot come from the Canaanites. They are cursed. And so he commissions this servant to go back to Mesopotamia, where Abraham is from, to his kinsmen, to the land of Ur, and find Isaac a wife. And he calls on him to make an oath here. And this is a very strange way to make an oath. Be glad that we do handshakes and sign papers and raise our right hand, that we do not take oaths this way. But the way in which the oath was taken was to remember the promise and the sign of the covenant. And I'll let you do your research more on that topic. But verse 5, the servant said to him, perhaps the woman may not be willing to follow me to this land, back to the land of Canaan. Must I take your son to the land in which she came? And Abraham said, no. See to it that you do not take my son back there. Isaac cannot go back there. God has promised this land. And then notice verse 7. And the Lord, the God of heaven, who took me from my father's house and from the land of my kindred, who spoke to me and swore to me, to your offspring I will give this land. He will send his angel before you, and you shall take a wife from my son from there. But if the woman is not willing to follow you, then you will be free of my oath. Only you must not take my son back there. Now notice something here. Remember Abraham's first words in Genesis? They were a lie to a Pharaoh. because he doubted the promise of God. Abraham's last words are going to be words of faith that God is going to do what he said for Isaac. And here he is reassuring this servant of God's promise, God's faithfulness to him. So we see verse 9, the servant makes the oath and sets off. But the first thing we see in this chapter is that success as servants of God must be rooted in God's faithfulness. Notice his commitment is rooted in this promise that Abraham reiterates here. But we know that God's faithfulness to Abraham is just a subplot in the overall story of the Bible. The Bible is about God's faithfulness to Jesus. All of God's promises are ultimately fulfilled in Jesus. Jesus is Abraham's great, 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 I think that's enough greats, I'm not sure, great's grandson. And he receives all that God promised to Abraham. And yet he is the only one in the story who can then turn around and provide all of Abraham's promises to Abraham's descendants. And Abraham's descendants are those who by faith, not of a certain ethnicity, who by faith believe in Jesus, who believe they will be blessed in Jesus by blessing him through trusting in him and not cursed by rejecting him. So when we read this, we understand that our success as servants of God must be rooted in God's faithfulness to Jesus. Whatever commitments you have in this life, whatever oaths you have taken as a spouse, as a parent, as an employee, as a citizen, whatever commitments you have, if they are disconnected from God's faithfulness to Jesus, they will not mean anything for eternity. And so you, as one before God today, you have to ask the question, how does all of my life and all of the things I am committed to fit in God's story to do everything he has promised to do for Jesus? God has raised Jesus from the dead. He has seated him at his right hand. He is ruling. He is reigning. He will gather his church from the nations. That is the story of the Bible and God's faithfulness. You've got to ask the question today, how does my life fit in that story? How does my commitments fit in that story? And notice, we next see we align ourselves with God's providence through prayer. Notice verse 10. Then the servant took 10 of his master's camels. Now, this would be like setting out in limos, SUVs, blacked out. Camels were rare, and if you had camels, you were very, very wealthy. And so here the servant goes across country. And notice he takes with him all sorts of choice gifts from his master. This will be for dowry, for a bride. And notice, and he arose and went. And there's just emphasis here. He departed, he arose and went to Mesopotamia, to the city of Nahor. He is obeying here. He is committed to this task. And then he made the camels kneel down outside of the city, by the well of water. This is where everyone would go to get water for themselves, for their animals. And it was in the evening, the time when women go out to draw water. This would have been the task, mostly even of single women. They would go out and provide water for their households, the daughters of households. And notice what he does, verse 12, as we read earlier. He prays. How is he going to align his mission to God's providence? He prays. And he says, God of my master Abraham, notice the way in which he prays. This is about your faithfulness to Abraham. He says, grant me success today and show steadfast love to my master Abraham. Notice how his prayer is other-centered. This isn't about me. You haven't promised to do anything for me, but you have promised to show steadfast love to Abraham. So the way in which I will be successful today is if you bless Abraham in providing his son a wife. And notice he continues, behold, I am standing by the spring of water, and the daughters of men of the city, they are coming out to draw water. Let the young woman whom I shall say, please let down your jar of water that I may drink, and who shall say, drink, and I will water your camels, let her be the one whom you have appointed for your servant Isaac. And he says, by this I shall know that you have sworn your steadfast love to my master. Now, this is not a way to determine God's will in your life. We have God's will in the Word of God, where we give our hearts and minds over to, so that He would shape our hearts and minds according to His will. And this isn't a way to find a wife. Single guys, don't send your buddy to Chick-fil-A this week. And the first young lady that offers to refill his drink, that's who he should ask to marry you. Don't do that. It's not what's going on here. It's actually not mystical at all. If you notice, his prayer is that in the ordinary, routine, daily events of watering camels, God might provide a wife for Isaac. That in the ordinary, in the routine, I would see your providence unfold. God, help me to see it. This is the way it should unfold. In this ordinary way, a woman is going to come out and she's going to ask, can I give you some water? And I'm going to ask for water. And then she's going to say, and by the way, can I water your camels? That was probably going to happen anyway. And he says, just make it obvious when this happens that this is the one. But we see here that his success in aligning his life to the promises of God is seen in his prayer. And this is how we align our lives, first of all, to God's providence, to Christ on a daily basis, is through prayer. Remember in our prayer study, we said prayer is asking God to do what he said he would do. And we see in the Bible what God said he would do. He's going to be faithful to Jesus. Jesus is his king, who will rule and reign forever. And all of his blessings are wrapped up in Jesus. And he's going to do everything for Jesus that he has promised. And so your prayer on a daily basis should be like the servant, let me see what you are doing for Jesus right in front of me. Let me see it, Father. On a daily basis, his providence is unfolding in the ordinary, the watering of camels. Let me see it. A lot of us are discontent because we're looking for the mysterious, we're looking for the mystical, and we're looking for signs when what God is doing is right in front of you. And so you pray, Jesus, let me see your providence unfold on this drive to work, this time that I have with my kids as we go to school. In the car, in the checkout line, in the contractor's meeting, in the break room, at the game, at the gym, in the backyard when I'm playing with my grandkids. God, today, let me see your providence unfold before me. Let me see what you are doing for Jesus right in front of me in all of these ordinary ways. This must be the prayer of your life every morning. Help me see your faithfulness to Jesus as you are gathering for him a bride right in front of me. Notice, next we see his praise is aligned with God's providence. Before he had finished speaking, now that is a way in which the text just thunders in. He's praying and all of a sudden God's providence shows up. And notice, behold Rebekah, who was born of Bethuel, the son of Milcah, the wife of Nahor, Abraham's brother. This would have been Isaac's second cousin. This is just kind of how things worked out at this time. But this is his own kinsman. This is exactly what Abraham wanted, what he is praying for. And she comes out with her water jar on her shoulder. And the young woman was very attractive. Okay. He realizes, okay, this is different. This is unique. Not that there weren't other attractive women, but he notices her appearance. And she was a maiden whom no man had known. And she went down to the spring and filled her jar and came up. Then the servant ran to meet her and said, again, remember what he prayed, please give me a little water to drink from your jar. And she said, drink, my Lord. And she quickly let down her jar upon her hand and gave him a drink. And when she had finished giving him a drink, she said, I will draw water for your camels until they have finished drinking. So she quickly emptied her jar into the trough and ran again to the well to draw water. And she drew for all his camels. And the man gazed at her in silence to learn whether the Lord had prospered his journey or not. And we're saying, yeah, of course he did. All of the ordinariness that you prayed for is right in front of you. But here we see she's attractive, but she's also very hospitable, and she's gritty. Camels would drink over 25 gallons of water. And so she spent a long time having to provide water for them. And he watches and he sees. He sees her work ethic. He sees her hospitality. And she stands out. And so he knows this is her. And so when the camels had finished drinking, the man took a gold ring weighing a half a shekel and two bracelets for her arms weighing 10 gold shekels and said, please tell me whose daughter you are. Is there room in your father's house for us to spend the night? And she tells him who she is. And then she makes it clear that in her father's house there are rooms for them to spend the night. But notice how the section ends, verse 26. The man bowed his head and worshiped the Lord. Blessed be the Lord, the God of my master, who has not forsaken, notice, his steadfast love and faithfulness toward my master. As for me, the Lord has led me in this way to the house of my master's kinsman. Now, notice, he has been praying to be used by the Lord in this way, praying to see it, and when it unfolds, he praises God. It's just natural that if you're connected to God's purposes in the world and you are praying to be used and you're praying for Jesus' kingdom to come and you're praying for those things, when you see it, you will praise God for it. And so your praise is aligned with God's providence. And this should be a part of your life. This should be the aroma of your life, looking around and seeing all that God is doing and thanking God for it and thanking God that he would use you in the ordinariness to accomplish his purposes. One of the reasons some of us are so miserable is because we are looking for God's purposes in the news. And you're scared and you're fearful and you're miserable because you ain't going to find it there. You're not going to find it. You're not going to find Jesus accomplishing his purposes in those clear ways in the news. He will use those things for his glory. But all of us here today have a very clear window into how and where God is being faithful to Jesus. You can see it. Instead of looking elsewhere, look around. You see God's faithfulness here in Ashland Kids. There are children whose their lives are being transformed and taken in a different direction right now. In Awana, as they hide God's word in their heart. 2 weeks ago in VBS, as we just saturated kids with the gospel and we showed them how great the kingdom of Christ is, and their lives are being transformed. As we see students discipled in our Ashland student ministry so well and so faithfully, their hearts and their minds are being latched to the promises of God. As we send out young adults around the world for the sake of the gospel, as folks who find themselves right now in a unique season of singleness, some of them have never been married. Some of them have been divorced, and some of them are widowed. And you know what they're doing? They're using that season in their life for the sake of the gospel to disciple others. That's how the kingdom unfolds. There you see it right there. Instead of in the conference, in the movement, in the big ways, no, you see it all around you. You see God's faithfulness to Jesus as couples in this congregation give themselves over to live out the gospel in their marriages, as they invest in their children, as they raise them in the fear and admonition of the Lord so that generations would follow Jesus. You see it as that seasoned adult, if you were here last week, finds themselves in assisted living. And they cling to the gospel to the very end. And they can't leave the room for months. But nurses, family, and people all around hear of the gospel that they are clinging to, even in the face of death. That's how the kingdom moves. That's God's faithfulness to Jesus right in front of you. I wonder this. Do you spend time praising God for those things? Or do you spend more time worrying, just fretting, full of anxiety? What's going to happen in the election? What's going to happen here? Oh, I get to see what Jesus is doing clearly right in front of me in the people of God who are living out His faithful providence on a daily basis. But notice next, we see undistracted witness. The servant ends up at Rebekah's home. Her brother Laban meets him, realizes that he has great wealth, and I'm going to start summarizing and skipping. And in verse 31, he says, "Come in, O blessed of the Lord. Why do you stand outside? For I have prepared the house and a place for camels." He has heard how wealthy Abraham is. Now Abraham's servant is there, has met his sister. He says, "Come on in. We'll show you great hospitality." And they put the camels in the barn, wash their feet, which was a custom. They have a meal together. And then he begins to ask, "So what is going on?" And notice verse 33. "Then the food was set before him," speaking of the servant. "But the servant said, 'I will not eat.'" Now that is extremely disrespectful. There's a lot of hoopla going on. "We know who you are. We want to be blessed by you. Sit down and eat. Take care of your camels. Let's wash your feet. Let's give you some food." And he says, "I can't eat. I have to tell you why I'm here." Now, this would have been disrespectful, but he gets to the point, and he says, "Speak on." And then we see in the next section how the story is retold. And for time, I'm not going to do that today. But beginning in verse 34, we see all of the events retold. And they're retold in great detail. And if you're reading through, you go, "Why is he spending all..." We already know all that happened. But there's a point in the detail. And it's that God was providentially ordering every detail to lead this servant to Rebekah and to this home. This is something God has done in His providence, down to every little detail. And we'll pick up in verse 48. He ends his witness this way: "Then I bowed my head after I had found Rebekah and worshiped the Lord and blessed the Lord." Again, I had prayed for this. God fulfilled His word to Abraham in my presence, and so I praised Him, the Master, my Master's Lord, who led me by the right way to take the daughter of my Master's kinsman from his son. And then notice what He does. "Now then, if you are going to show steadfast love and faithfulness to my Master, if you will align with Abraham," notice how he puts it. "I'm not just asking for to take your sister back to Abraham's son. In doing so, you are blessing Abraham. You are aligning with Abraham. You are giving yourself over to God's faithfulness to Abraham in this way." And so he presses him. "Tell me. If not, tell me that I may turn to the right or to the left. If you're not going to give your sister's hand over to Isaac, tell me now. If you're not going to bless Abraham in this way, tell me now." And then Laban and Bethuel, the father is there at this point. The son seems to be speaking, doing the negotiations. But they both say, this thing has come from the Lord. We cannot speak to you bad or good. God has done this. There's no decision on our part. God has already decided through these ordinary events that you have retold. Then verse 51, but behold, Rebekah before you, you take her and you go, and let her be the wife of your master's son, as the Lord has spoken. Notice, as the Lord has spoken. Through the ordinary events, God has spoken. In his providence, he has ordered these things. This is his will. And when Abraham's servant heard their words, he bowed himself to the earth before the Lord. Now, it seems good at this moment. Everything's working out. Negotiations are good. Rebekah's going to go back with the servant to be married to Isaac. Deal done. Except, 53. The servant brought out jewelry and silver and gold and garments and gave them to Rebekah. He also gave to her brother and her mother costly ornaments. And so this is what I'm here for. This is the dowry, the payment for the bride. And now everyone's getting gifts. Even the brother, emphasis on the brother here, has received costly treasures, gifts. And he and the men who were with him, they ate and drank, and they spent the night there. And when they arose in the morning, the servant said, send me away to my master. But notice what has happened, verse 55. Her brother and her mother said, let the young woman remain with us a while. At least 10 days after that she may go. What has happened? All of a sudden, all these gifts have come out. All of a sudden, the treasures are out. They spent a night eating and drinking together. They've had time to sleep on it. We can get more out of this deal than we've already gotten. Let her stay a little bit longer, and maybe 10 days, 10 nights full of gifts, full of blessings. Let her stay. But notice the servant again, he has been intent on speaking, and now he is intent on accomplishing his mission. He said to them, do not delay me. Since the Lord has prospered my way, send me away that I may go to my master. You just said this was the Lord's doing. You just said this is the Lord's will. Why are you distracted now? I will not be distracted. I will accomplish my mission. And they said, let us call the young woman and ask her. Now, this would have been odd. This wouldn't happen this way. She would have really had no say in this. And so, again, he's stalling. There is a distraction with Laban, and we feel the tension. Is the story going to move away from Abraham's story? God's blessing to Abraham. And so they bring Rebekah down, and they say, will you go with this man? And she says, I will go. And in all this, we see the servant's witness. Remember, he is witnessing God's faithfulness to Abraham. And what is he doing with Rebekah? What is he doing with Laban and Rebekah's family? He is calling them to align with Abraham. Now, for them, it means giving their daughter, their sister, away. But he's being very clear. This comes down to Abraham. The Lord is doing all of this for Abraham. Will you align with God's purposes to Abraham? And as we said in the beginning, that is what Genesis is about. You receive blessing when you align with Abraham in his story. You are cursed if you set yourself apart from Abraham. And we see an undistracted witness. No, I'm going to speak. I'm going to tell you why I'm here. I'm not even going to be distracted by your food. And then I'm not going to be distracted by your ploy for more wealth. I'm going to be focused. You must align with Abraham. Here is the decision. Will you go? And she says, yes, I will go. It's the same thing that Jesus calls to us. Follow me. Follow me. Align with me. Identify with me. And I wonder today if in your heart you say, I will follow. Wherever he leads, I will go. That's what's going on here. That's where blessing is found. But the emphasis is on the servant's witness. And I think it's so important for us today to be reminded to not be distracted. To not be distracted with our witness. We live in a world where everyone is picking a side. And we make at one side versus the other side, and we got to figure out which is good or bad, right or wrong. Listen, the world doesn't define which side is right or wrong or who wins in the end. There is only one side, and his name is Jesus, and he is King. And the question for you today is, will you align with Jesus? That is my witness to you today. Will you align your life with Jesus, no matter how else it lines up? Because God's blessings are only found in Jesus. And just like the servant says here, God's blessings were only found in Abraham. If you do not align with Jesus, you will be cursed. And we've got to get used to this poignant, compassionate, clear, compelling, evangelistic witness in our life. Because we have been so fooled into thinking that our life is about picking which sports team we're going to cheer for when it comes to what's going on in the world. I'm for this party. I'm for this party. And it's okay. That's fine. You need to pick, when it comes to politics, things that line up with your Christian faith. But do not confuse that for your Christian witness. Do not. We are called to look people in the eye and call them to follow the Lord Jesus Christ, and to tell them if they do not identify with God's King, they will spend eternity in hell. When is the last time that you've done that? When's the last time you've had an undistracted witness in your own life? Maybe you're talking with your neighbor. He comes over and you're just interacting. When is the last time you've just stopped and said, let me tell you about Jesus, and just kind of broke through the niceties, because the niceties can distract us from what's really at stake. And it is God's blessing that is found in his providence to Christ. Then we see how this story ends. Rebecca and her entourage, they leave home. They leave home and the family's singing. They're singing songs about her being blessed. But if you'll notice, the songs fold right into things that God has said about Abraham. And so she is being folded into his story as she leaves home. But notice verse 62. We see how our lives are to be identified with God's faithful providence. Notice, now Isaac, what's interesting in Genesis here is Abraham is no longer mentioned in this chapter. And then the next chapter, we see that he dies. His story is coming to a close. And now it's going to be about Isaac. And so where is Isaac? Well, it's a place that we know well, Beer Lahai-Roi, which was a well in Negev, which is a wilderness. Now, we remember this from the story of Hagar, who was cast out. And yet there she realizes God sees. God is for her. God is providentially ordering her steps at this well. And so that's brought back up here to remind us that God is providing something for Isaac. Notice verse 63. What had Isaac been doing? He was out to meditate in the field toward the evening. And he lifted up his eyes and saw, and behold, there were camels. We don't really know what Isaac was praying for. The word meditate means to go for a walk, go for a chat. So he's in the field praying to the Lord, maybe asking for a wife. And then behold, he begins to see what God has been doing in a faraway land for his good. He sees it come to pass before his eyes. And then verse 64. And Rebekah lifted up her eyes, and when she had saw Isaac, she dismounted from the camel and said to her servant, who is that man walking in the field to meet us? And we feel the hallmark moment kind of come into the picture here. And the servant said, it is my master. Now notice how the chapter began. Who was his master? Abraham. Now it's Isaac. His loyalty is to Isaac. God's faithfulness has moved to fulfilling all that he promises now to Isaac, who becomes the central figure. And then in verse 66, the servant told Isaac all the things that he had done. Then Isaac brought her into the tent of Sarah, his mother, and took Rebekah, and she became his wife. And notice, he loved her. He is committed to her. So Isaac was comforted after his mother's death. Now, the emphasis here is now Rebekah becomes the matriarch. The emphasis of the text is we start with Abraham, we end with Isaac. The chapter begins, who is going to be the matriarch from whom the descendants will come? And we end with Rebekah. And we see Isaac and Rebekah, they find blessing, even in their relationship at this point, by being found in God's faithfulness to Abraham. Isaac finds a wife because God is being faithful to Abraham. Rebekah becomes that wife because God is being faithful to Abraham. They find blessing in Abraham's story. And we read this, and I've read so much garbage this week about this chapter, which says, here we have this beautiful love story. And if you will just be like Rebekah, and you will be attractive and hospitable and hardworking, you will find a husband. And if you trust God and meditate out in the field and walk with the Lord, sooner or later, your bride is going to show up on a camel. I don't know. It's just garbage. Because that's not what this is about at all. At all. I heard this week of and it is real. You can search it online, of a youth group study about dating and courtship. And the book is titled, Will You Water My Camels? It's insane, this sort of application that people would get from this passage. Because it's not about being a wife worthy of marriage by being attractive and hospitable. It's actually just the opposite. And we find another story around a well in the book of John. And Jesus shows up at a well, and there's a Samaritan woman. And there's nothing about her that would have been attractive to a Jewish man. Actually, he's not even supposed to talk with her. And she's not chaste like Rebekah. She's frazzled and disheveled. And he tells her, you, even you, if you knew who was standing before you and believed in him, could have living water that never runs dry. And it is to remind us that Jesus has come to find a bride, and she's not chaste, and she's mostly lazy for his glory, and she doesn't welcome him as Lord and King. And so what does he do? He works his providence for her good. And he dies for her sin. And he lives the life that she needs in his place. And she promises when she believes in him, she gets all of his blessings. All of the blessings that were promised to Abraham are given to Isaac, because the servant latched his life to God's providence. And if today you would latch your life to Jesus, all of God's providence and faithfulness that is directed to Jesus will be given to you. If you would find your identity in him, having your sins forgiven, covered in his righteousness, he loves Jesus, he is committed to Jesus, Jesus will get everything he promised him, will you find yourself in his story instead of trying to write lesser stories, silly stories that do not end well? But would you find yourself in Jesus' story? Because when you do, that overflows in prayer, praise, and witness. When you understand, this is who I am as a child of God. then you long to see God's purposes unfold. You're praising God as it unfolds, and you are more than willing to witness His providence in your life. You see, this is a beautiful story that points to a more beautiful story of Christ in the church. And it's the story that the Father sends us to tell. You see, some of you are here today and you're very discontent because you were told you were going to change the world. You were so special and you're going to do big, big things. And you're watering camels. And you're thinking, how in the world is this big, big things? And how in the world am I changing, making an impact on the world? And yet it's in those very places where you are watering camels where God's providence is unfolding. As you are changing diapers and grading papers and balancing budgets, driving bobcats, drilling concrete, and greeting people at Walmart. Right there, just like this servant, if you would latch your life to God's providence, you will see and experience the glory of His promises unfolding right before you. Maybe everyone can be famous in a small town.